You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hi, high rolling, high fivers, high tailing down the information superhighway. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 176, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your highfalutin highnesses drinking highballs and high seas eating hydrox in our high tops.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Today is a special day. Today is, as we're recording, it's National Oreo Day.
Oh.
And
when Oreo celebrates its victory over hydrox.
Yeah.
Sandwich cookie wars.
The most successful imposter ever.
But I know. We know that hydrox was, in fact,
the original
black and white sandwich cookie.
They don't make hydrox anymore.
They don't.
It's sad.
Yeah. Like, I tried looking for it, like, even in maybe, like, oh, there's, like, still one factory that's pumping them out. Nope.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
They've branched out. They've gotten very elaborate with their flavors.
They
lately.
Have been. And also, their international flavors are pretty crazy, too. Here are some Oreo trivia honoring National Oreo Day. There are two versions of Oreo cookies that debuted in 1912. Oreo came out with two flavors. One is what we know.
Okay.
Do you know what the other flavor is?
It's not vanilla.
It's like coconut?
Is it? Banana.
Banana's Twinkie.
Right.
Twinkie had a vanilla and a banana one.
I don't know.
Chocolate and ginger. Is the filling different or is the cookie
It was
different?
Lemon meringue.
Oh.
So it was like a lemon sandwich cookie. Obviously the chocolate, the black and white cookie was far more popular, and so Nabisco discontinued the lemon meringue cookies in the 1920s. Double stuff Oreo is a misnomer. It does not contain 2.0 times the amount of stuff.
Is it more or less than double?
It contains 1.86.
I believe it. I believe it.
Get our lawyer on the phone.
Because you cannot call
a
double.
We have a case.
When you try to make your own double stuffed, it ends up much bigger.
Although, did they get around it? Was double like D-U-B-L or something? Did they have some creative spelling?
No, stuff
is one F.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
They don't know what the measurement of a stuff is.
Right.
It's not entirely 2.0 times big. Another fact, and this is compiled from Time and Mental Floss. I have a couple of good Oreo tidbits. Pigs do not like Oreos.
Really?
And I'm not saying that. I don't think it's scientifically like proven, but there is an anecdote from Ben and Jerry's in Vermont, the ice cream maker. Usually they donate their food wastes to like local farms and stuff.
Okay.
And in 1985, a farmer reported that his hogs loved all of it except for mint with Oreo cookies.
Now,
or cookies and cream mint. So is it the mint or is it the cookies?
In terms of scientific rigor, this doesn't seem.
No.
Yeah.
So, I know something, Karen, that you could try.
Yeah.
Data point.
You're a scientist.
I can feed my pig.
If only we knew someone with access to a pig.
Right.
I feel like he'll like it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You can like write them a letter, show a picture of him.
But you're not supposed to give animals chocolate or caffeine or anything.
Oh, that makes sense. What were the Ben and Jerry's people giving them if they?
Yeah,
gave
why?
Them all sorts
why are
of
they
chocolate?
Giving them like giant tubs of ice cream?
That's true.
Not to give. We should further research is required.
And Colin, we looked this up like in the car the other day about what in chocolate that makes dogs sick,
right,
and that's poisonous. And there is a compound, and you can find other things that
there are bromine, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it makes them sick.
Once we were making some kind of elaborate cake in like Regina's old kitchen, and it was chocolate cake. Nothing, no big pieces fell to the ground, just crumbs. But Ricky, the dog, spent all day just vacuuming up all of the tiny little chocolate crumbs, and then just at the end of the day, just comes up to us and like just vomits. liquid that's just the chocolate. He's like,
You actually, most of the time, animals do
they vomit it up.
They actually do like, hey, my body doesn't feel great, I'm gonna take care of this. One last Oreo fact. Oreos are kosher and vegan.
They're vegan?
Really? They're vegan. There is no cream or any dairy products.
It's all vegetable shortening,
it is. Okay. So it used to be made out of lard.
That's what I thought it was.
For a long time, until like I think the 1990s, it became kosher. They stopped using lard. I mean, it might be manufactured in a place where dairy stuff gets manufactured, but what goes into the cooking?
Not the recipe.
Yeah. So when you say like
cream is spelled differently,
That is spelled differently.
You got to check the spelling. Anytime somebody gets fancy with the spelling,
misspellings, a lawyer's best friend.
So that's that's today, March 6th, National Oreo Day. Speaking of national days, I'm thinking, you know what, like. Every day seems like it's a day for something. And I was like, I know there is a trivia day, but there is no pub trivia day. On the train here, I applied for a national pub trivia day.
Good idea.
That's awesome.
Let's hope it gets approved. Actually, it's not even day. I just said the last full week of April.
What
you know,
is the controlling
trivia,
legal authority? Yeah. How would you send this into?
What agency?
There's a place that, there's like a publisher or a company that would like release basically like an almanac of all the different days and lists. And then they'll give you a certificate and stuff. Only if they approve your application.
They're gonna, if they come back and they tell you they need $500
Probably.
Don't do it.
Yeah. I would. I would.
It doesn't mean anything.
But to have a like a national... Sorry, it's a more of a week. Because the thing is, like, I can pick a day, but usually pub trivia is on a weekday, and if, what if it's, like, on the weekend or whatever. So I just said last full week of April.
So people have time to celebrate.
Yeah, it's pub trivia week.
That's cool.
And then
that's
you know, we can get people to, like, go to their local pub trivia and play trivia and celebrate pub trivia day. We'll see how it goes.
We may need you to help us defray the cost here.
But I was like, that's pretty cool. We'll see. And we also have other exciting news, Chris.
Yes. So I was just out at a video game conference where Penn Jillette, one half of Penn and Teller, was doing one half of the keynote address with video game designer Randy Pitchford. And it turns out I was the only person who got to interview Penn at that video game conference. And I was just going to interview him and take the take the notes and put him in an article. But the conversation was so good that I just dropped it into what was then the latest episode of the Game Life podcast that I do at Wired. There's a lot of really interesting conversation about things outside of video games. Some really great stories from Penn that I think Good Job Brain listeners would really like. So yeah, like soundcloud.com/wired, and then you can kind of scroll through and look for the Game Life podcast with Penn Jillette if you want to listen to it.
Oh, that sounds great. I'll listen to that.
Thank you. I also have just a very, very quick... it's our usual segment, our very usual segment, which we talk about things that we slipped up on, and that's called...
For
some weird reason, I was doing the posthumous Grammy quiz about people who were awarded Grammy Awards, after they had passed away. I wrote down for some reason 2003 instead of 2013 as the year in which Ravi Shankar, the sitar player, won, his posthumous Grammy. It was not 2003, it was 2013. I did review the tape. It would not have affected the results. Karen's posthumous Grammy stands.
We're about to come reclaim
it. She didn't win a posthumous Grammy.
She did. It was
the paper plate
and
version.
And I wrote posthumous Grammy on it.
I have one correction to supply as well.
Really?
A couple episodes back, we were talking about the Florida Marlins, or now the Miami Marlins. And Karen, you had talked about how they're baseball teams with a lot of fish down in Florida, and you're like the Rays. And I corrected you. I thought I was correcting you. I was like, oh, they're not fish. They're Rays. Rays are, in fact, fish.
See, I knew that deep in my heart. I didn't want to argue.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. No, you know, we should always
Rays are so stingrays, manta rays are fish.
They are, yes, in the broader categorization of the cartilaginous bony fish. Yes, they are fish. Mm-hmm. So Rays are fish.
And then also related to the team, and we made a joke about they're either fish footwear or birds, like baseball teams. Comedian and funny man, singer-songwriter Stephen Lynch on Twitter tweeted at us and said that Cincinnati Reds actually is short for Red Stockings. So we have another another footwear footwear team. Footwear, yes. Birds and fish.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Lots of socks. Yeah, socks were really big back in the olden days.
It was.
Well, yeah, they were so brand new.
Yeah.
I had to walk around barefoot for so long.
Like, I covered my foot. Look at it.
All right, and without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hot shot.
Well, what I have here has been kicking around in the old Good Job Brain suitcase for nigh on 5 years now, and looking quite a bit worse for the wear. It is a book of Jeopardy questions, not from the 1960s Jeopardy game we've often played, but from a time closer to our hearts is 2003 Jeopardy.
Yeah. So we'll actually get some of these.
In order to answer these questions, you're going to have to put yourself back into the state of mind of 2003 Karen, Colin, and Dana.
Much easier than 1960s. Yeah.
And indeed, our first category is called State of Mind.
Okay.
All of these, I believe, are adjectives that could describe a person's mood.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I don't think you're supposed to tell us what it's supposed
Every
to
be. Every now and again, Alex Trebek will give a little bit
of
okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, if he's like, they did a poor job writing the title.
Yeah.
It's not
self-explanatory. I thought it was
like, it was like 50 states or something.
This is a double Jeopardy round. The fake money is doubled.
Okay.
You get double the fake money for answering these questions. So your $400 question is, if you're this on your luck, you might also be this in the mouth. Colin.
What is down?
Indeed.
What is down in your mouth?
Down in the mouth.
Down in the mouth.
Yep.
Kind of sad.
Yeah, down in the mouth.
Oh, you're okay. Your mouth is pointing down.
This is a very unfair category for Karen. Often follow. Oh, this is your it's your $800 question.
Mm-hmm.
Often followed by up. It means not liquored up or serious in demeanor.
Oh,
Colin.
What is sober?
What is sobered?
Oh,
yeah, I believe. Yeah, sobered up. The $2 million question is now. This 7-letter word for thoughtful comes from the French for to think. Karen.
What is pensive? What is pensive?
It's okay.
Yeah.
You get the warning the first time. Yes, pensive. What is pensive? All right. The zillion-dollar question.
Okay.
As well as in good humor, it means a machine that grinds up pieces of wood. Colin.
I've been watching a lot of Fargo recently, which has the top of mind. What is chipper?
What is chipper?
What is grinder?
And it grinds up pieces of wood. Okay. Finally, the floppity jillion dollar question.
All right. The most important question.
Yes.
Okay.
John Quincy Adams's last words were, I am this synonym of satisfied.
Oh.
Whoa.
Content? What is content?
Yes, I am content.
Wow.
John Quincy Adams' last words.
So wow. I win. That was the most money.
You floppity jillion.
Biding her time.
Yeah. We have a second round, actually.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, sorry.
Floppity jillion.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
I can't even believe it. The title of this category is A Kate-gory.
Oh.
Oh, like category?
Oh, yeah, dear. Like category.
Okay.
A Kate-gory.
Kate-gory.
Sure. Kate-gory.
That's a little better.
Kate-gory.
Marginally better.
Okay.
$100. She was Ophelia to Branagh's Hamlet in 96. What? Oh,
sorry.
I wasn't done with the question. Sure. 1 year later, her career got a, quote, Titanic boost.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Dana.
Who is Kate Winslet?
It's Kate Winslet, yes. $200. She garnered an Oscar nomination for her role in Almost Famous.
Oh.
Dana? Who was it? Yeah, Dana.
Yeah, yeah. What's her name?
Nothing. Karen?
Who is Kate Hudson?
Hudson.
That's her name. I was Kate like Hudson. Blondie.
Yeah, Kate something.
Blondie Goldie.
Sorry.
She became co-anchor of Today in 1991. Colin.
Who is Katie Couric?
Couric. $400. Before she was a Voyager captain, she was Sam's love interest on Cheers. Oh. Colin.
Who is Kate Mulgrew?
Kate Mulgrew.
Good job.
And finally, here's a question for you. So, here's an answer, rather. Celebrity... Celebrity birthdays for January 16 include AJ Foyt and and this waif supermodel. Dana.
Who is Kate Moss?
Who's Kate Moss? Yes.
What kind of question is that?
Who is
like,
AJ
well, I know
Foyt.
AJ Foyt and yeah. Kate Moss share a birthday. So naturally.
How do we pull in
Kate Moss in a way that we haven't done before? Wait,
I believe AJ Foyt is a race car driver.
Okay.
I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong.
You guys did really well. That round was not a catastrophe.
Get out.
And, yes. That was a category 5.
Basically, you can just use any cat puns.
Yeah.
Kate on a hot tin roof.
Yeah.
That's
I feel like that's a
go to that movie.
Devoid of context, yeah.
Oh, whoa. Good job, Brains.
Yes.
This week, Colin, you are our new topic chooser.
Oh, yeah.
For the time being.
Yeah, it's, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
I asked if I could nominate, I guess, a few topics, so I just went nuts, and this was the first.
Go for it.
This was the first in several.
Well, you didn't realize the rest of us were just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Whatever you want, Colin. Yeah.
Let's work for us.
You know, it's I get eager and excited. I like to start prepping for the episodes ahead of time. So, yeah, so this was the first in a sequence of several episodes that I've suggested. Okay. I thought something all around translation and language. I mean, you guys know I'm a huge language nerd, and mm-hmm. we talk about it just a lot in Pub Quiz. We all have our own little language fascination.
So today, let's get lost in translation. So if you want it, let's get on it, girl. 'Cause I don't really need too much information. Yeah, if I'm honest, we're from different worlds. All about this feeling won't be lost in translation.
I will start us off. As I just said, I am a self-professed language nerd. In particular, I love loan words, and I love foreign language idioms. And most importantly, for the purposes of Good Job Brain, I think they make for great quizzes.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of these things like where I don't realize how much we take for granted all these foreign language phrases that we just use so casually in English without maybe necessarily giving it a second thought. According to Philip Durkin, author of Borrowed Words, A History of Loan Words in English, modern English, we have more loan words from Latin than any other language.
Okay.
And that's not terribly surprising, you know, especially like in the legal profession, you know, quid pro quo, status quo. I mean, we have so many Latin phrases. But of sort of the living languages, French takes the cake. We have, in modern English, we have way more French loan words and phrases than any other language, more than Greek, German, Italian, Spanish, Dutch, and it's not even really close. Like, it's after Latin, it's French, and then everything else in modern English. So I have a quiz called Pardon My French.
All right.
And
sure you do.
It is all about words and phrases that I can say with certainty you guys all know these phrases. So the quiz for you guys is not what do they colloquially mean. I want you to tell me what do these phrases literally mean. I'll give you an example here.
All right.
So in English, we say, you know, somebody with unlimited authority is said to be given carte blanche.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what does carte blanche mean? This would be the quiz.
White card.
Literally, white card. Or, you know, a little more closely, blank card, carte blanche. And, you know, we have the same meaning of blank check. Like, it literally has the same meaning of like, oh,
you fill it in
I give him a blank check to do whatever he wants. Carte blanche.
Do
right, exactly.
You,
you make the rules. You write it down. Right. So I think you guys get the gist of this quiz. I'm going to set up a very short sentence. The last thing I say for all of them will be the French phrase. So remember, you're telling me what the words literally mean.
Right.
And this may be a little unfair advantage for some of us who have taken French.
Who took French, Karen?
Okay. I took French.
All right. Oh. I think we can figure these out. We'll try and start easy here.
All right.
We just did, of course, a installment of Actually, because on the show from time to time, we all commit a faux pas. Karen, what does faux pas mean literally?
Like a bad make?
Ooh, close.
Bad do?
Close.
Yeah, faux is False.
Yep.
False.
Pa. Pa. What is pa? It means step.
Really? Step.
Faux pas is a false step.
Okay. Oh. Right.
And much like a misstep. We are no strangers here to indulgent desserts among us. We have all surely enjoyed creme brulee. Mm-hmm. Dana, what does creme brulee literally mean?
It's cream fired, roasted, or something.
I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you.
Burned.
Burned. Yep, burnt. Burnt cream.
Pot of burnt cream.
Pot of burnt cream. No doubt you have all at one time or another experienced an overwhelming sense of déjà vu. Mm-hmm. What does déjà vu mean, Chris?
That is already seen.
That is exactly correct. Already seen. Not to be confused with déjà lu. Already read.
Already pooped. That's what I thought it was.
Deja poo.
Deja fe, already done.
Deja fe, already done.
In French, they have a whole family of the deja.
Yep.
Experimental artists are often said to be avant-garde. What does the avant-garde literally mean? Dana.
Is it the front of the guard?
The advanced guard, forward guard. Right, they're the sort of the most forward thinking on the cutting edge. Yep, exactly right.
I worked at a place called Avant Card. It was a stationery store.
Oh my goodness.
Speaking of artists, as kids, we all probably—I know I certainly did—work with papier-mâché, Karen. The first part's probably easy.
Oh, yeah, paper.
Paper, right. What is mâché?
Mâché is like battered, mixed up.
Mash?
Yeah.
It means chewed paper. And if you think about it, it does kind of look like someone's been chewing it up. Yeah. Ultimately, it comes from the root masticar, you know,
which is masticate.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Mâché.
To chew up your...
Wow, that's cool.
And kids...
Is that how they made it before?
I bet that's probably why.
You spend all day chewing paper and then the next day you get to...
Yeah, I mean, it's the actually, it's funny you say it. The enzymes actually in your saliva really do, they will break down paper faster than if you just mix it in with like regular tap water.
Sure. So chew that paper. This is true. Here is a true Chris Kohler fact. We made for Halloween 1 year a paper mache mask so that I could go as, this is true, Mac Tonight.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I know that is amazing.
Mac Tonight.
From the old McDonald's commercials. It was the Ray Charles moon.
It was the Ray Charles, a crescent moon, a man in a suit with a crescent moon for a head.
Wait, wouldn't he be Bobby Darin? Because he was singing Mac Tonight.
Yeah.
Which is based off Mac the Knife.
Right, but he had
sunglasses and he had
It was sort of a vague, yes. And so it was to try to convince people to go eat dinner at McDonald's because nobody eat dinner at McDonald's.
Oh,
yep.
I love Mac Tonight.
I was Mac Tonight for, you know, I probably do. Not on me.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Just kidding. It's in my wallet right now.
So glad.
We might be able to get one for you, Dana.
We're just looking for an opening.
I'll put in the request.
Like paper mache.
How big was it? Was it like huge?
No, it was just like, you know, a crescent moon for my own head.
You know, Chris Kohler head size.
Mac Tonight.
Even if you're not Catholic, you can still find plenty to enjoy on Mardi Gras, which is literally French for, I think Karen first on that one.
Fat Tuesday.
It is Fat Tuesday. The day before Ash Wednesday.
Tuesday fat.
Just Tuesday.
Why fat? Why fat? Why is it Fat Tuesday? What makes it fat?
Because you got to eat up before Lent.
That's right. That's right. Because you're about to hit Lent and you're just getting that last little...
Lean time.
Round of gluttony in there before you can take a break. In suburban neighborhoods, you will find many streets, many streets that end in a cul-de-sac. What does a cul-de-sac mean, literally? And I'll give you a little hint here. The sack part is sack. Our same word, sack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Karen.
Hold a sack.
Is cool like an end?
Very, very close.
Is it a button?
So this is one of those things I love where the double meaning exists in both French and English. Cul-de-sac literally means bottom of the bag.
And if you were writing
a dictionary or in polite company, bottom of the bag.
Right.
But if you press on French a little bit more, it's really more like ass of the bag.
Yep.
And if you see other phrases that have the word cool in it, you know, it has a very clear, yeah, like if you talk about like a film de cool, that means like a dirty movie. And like a magazine de cool is like a dirty magazine. So cul-de-sac, even though it's, you know, a perfectly acceptable phrase, it really, the illusion is it's like it's the bag's butt. Yeah.
But, but that's also where butt came from, right? We talked about it in our butt episode.
They're related. Yeah. They're
There's
related.
There's also a term for butt that is like a cul-de-sac, end of the street.
Right. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. If you do something you're particularly proud of, or to punctuate a trick as a magician, you might say, voila!
Oh.
You can omit the snooty French accent if you like.
Nice presto. Yeah.
Well, what does voila mean, literally, in French?
It means literally, there it is.
It close. It literally is, look there.
Look at there.
Look at there. Voila. Look at there.
Oh, my God. My head is blown away.
Yeah.
But it really translates to, like, there it is. Like, it does.
Sure.
It in French.
But I'm saying, like, voila is like
a
sandwich word from French words. It's like turned into one word. But
absolutely.
When you break it down, it's...
Because there's also voici, which comes from voici and ici, which is here.
Last one. This might be the trickiest one here.
Right.
In the last several years, especially in fancy restaurants and at home, an increasingly popular method of preparing food is the sous vide. Sous vide. I also like to call the creepy food bath. What does sous vide mean, Dana?
Is it with life?
No.
Under.
Yeah, sous is under.
Yeah.
Sous vide.
Pressure?
No. You're in the right ballpark, Karen.
Vacuum.
Under vacuum.
Vacuum.
Under vacuum.
Right, yeah.
Because that's the process, is you vacuum seal the food in the little bags, and then you cook it.
Oh.
Yeah, sous vide, under vacuum.
Under vacuum.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. All right, well, you guys did pretty dang good there. I think we need to go to Paris and record there.
Some more trivia tidbits for you guys.
All right, well done. That was, I will consider my French pardoned. So good job, guys.
Nice.
Good job. All right, I'm going to talk about military translation. Specifically, this is a topic I'm fascinated with, the code talkers.
Oh my God, those are cool.
Yeah.
There was a Nicolas Cage movie.
There was,
right? I'm not crazy.
It's called Wind Talkers. So code talkers were people in the 20th century who used their obscure languages, like very few people spoke their language. So they used that as the secret code for transmitting messages to the military. And some of the first people who were the code talkers were Native Americans. They were Cherokee and Choctaw. And this was in World War I when this first started.
Oh.
So in World War I is when they first figured out that this would be a good method of communicating. So when people are fighting in battle and they have the radios, it's easy to intersect those radio communications. It's easy to even crack codes. Like, people can sit there and figure out the codes.
Right.
It's really hard to crack spoken languages that you don't know or you can't hear it.
Right.
And you,
because like there's just like there's sounds that are in those languages that people use that there might be there's slight difference in sounds.
It's like Chinese, where if you haven't ever heard Chinese before, you can't even begin.
Yeah. There's no way
parse
in.
It. Yeah.
There's no way
you can't
in.
Even, you can't even write it down because you don't know what's different and what's not.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I see.
So they in World War I, the Cherokee and then the Choctaw took very great success. Within 24 hours of using them, like, they started winning all these battles. And then within 72 hours, like, the Germans started retreating. So they were like, oh my God, that is what we need to do. They were super excited about this.
Yeah. There's nobody in Germany speaking Choctaw.
Nobody knows Choctaw in Germany.
Yeah.
It's a very specific, Native American language. And so Hitler heard about this. Everybody heard about this, that Native American languages were going to be the new code. And so Hitler sent like 30 anthropologists to America between World War I and World War II to learn all the Native American languages.
Really?
There are hundreds of Native American languages.
That's true. A lot of tribes.
There's no way. Like, most of these you can't really learn unless you're like a child brought up learning it, because it's all tonal. Each language is just very hard to learn, and very few of them were written down.
Right,
so you
have
to,
like, what I was going to say.
If they had maybe like 80 years and like thousands of people trying to learn it, perhaps, but not in the small window between there. But the U.S. government wasn't sure, like, how much they learned or knew. So they were a little bit wary about using Native American speakers in Europe. They were looking around for what Native American language to use for their codes. And they figured out Navajo would be very good. It's a big tribe.
Even with like the 80 different Native American languages. Like, you have to get other people, enough people to understand, to be on the same ground, to speak and understand.
There was like a, there's a smaller tribe in Iowa, and they used them for some of it. But there were only, they had 26 soldiers, and that was like 16% of their, population. So so Navajo is really good because it has a big population. It was not written. They didn't have, I think there were very few books in Navajo at that time. So it was just totally an oral tradition. Also, something Navajo and also maybe other Native Americans at that time were really trained to do because it was an oral language. From the time they're children, they're told stories and they have to repeat them back verbatim. So they have to get very good at listening and giving the story back word for word. And so they'd start with a small one and then you graduate to another story. And then eventually you have like super long prayers and very intricate stories and they could do it perfectly verbatim. So they were the best possible people to like
the best life experience for this
to communicate your important messages because they would do it perfectly. And they did. They were so good at remembering the messages and delivering them word for word. So one of their worries, though, was a Navajo soldier would get captured, and then it would be like, oh, okay, well, code's cracked now because they'll understand it. So they added a code on top of it that only 400 soldiers knew. Those were the code talkers, and those were the people who knew the code, who were the ones who communicated. They didn't fire guns. In fact, they got used a lot. Like when a battle was over, they'd just be shipped to another battle front.
Like just like a giant communications unit, basically.
Yeah. Like human walkie-talkies. Right.
Like human encrypted walkie-talkies.
Iwo Jima, they're credited with doing amazing things for them. Within 2 days, they sent 800 perfectly encrypted messages back and forth. And they're probably, I mean, that's a big reason why they were so successful at that. They were so coordinated. The Japanese did capture a Navajo soldier, but he was not a code talker. And
so he wouldn't know.
He couldn't help because it all sounded like gibberish. Like they had such, it was Navajo and he understood that these were words or they're truncated words, but they like made no sense. It was like onion, leaf, plane, like what? I don't know what they're saying. He didn't know the code. So once World War II was over, They came home. And their language was classified, like the code talkers were classified. They couldn't talk about anything that had happened. They had a lot of trouble finding jobs when they got home because it was like, well, what were you doing? And it's like,
we can't talk about it.
Right.
It wasn't declassified until 1968. It was like 23 years before they were able to talk about their experiences.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That sucks.
And it wasn't, most of them were dead by the time they all got awarded Congressional Medals of Honor for their service.
Which was not, like that long ago, right?
It was in the early 2000s,
It is. It's bittersweet. It is really bittersweet to play such a pivotal role for this really specialized, not, I was going to say skill, but just for being who you are, being very specialized.
But it's all classified.
And not to be able to talk about it.
There's this website I found, NavajoCodeTalkers.org. And there are videos of the Navajo code talkers talking about their experiences. And they are fascinating. I highly recommend.
Obviously, we don't use spoken code at all anymore in warfare. Mm-hmm. Like, when did that get phased away? After World War II, probably?
They actually were using it until Vietnam.
Wow.
Yeah, until early Vietnam. And then they stopped doing it.
Here's another dumb question for me. Can you, like, go learn the language?
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure you can't learn it like, to a fluent level.
You won't sound native in that language.
You could learn it.
How much time?
How much time?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
But not in the middle of the war from Berlin. You're not going to.
There's no.
Rosetta Stone.
I signed it. Good news, boss. I signed up for a correspondence course. In 18 months, I'm going to be at a first grade level.
they're like highly trained listening and like repeating skills were also made it impossible for them to like decode it because they would just rattle it off and then they'd remember exactly what the other person
said. I think that's the piece of the puzzle.
It's that
they grew up with the reciting and memorization. Okay, I can speak this language, but you know, with English in 10th grade, it took me like 5 days to memorize the Hamlet soliloquy. You know what I mean? But this is like over radio. There was war going on and you're just like,
there's 600 code words and they know each of them, like, and how it translates from English to Navajo to this code and then back and forth.
All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages. Teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job Brain. And this week we're getting lost in translation.
This code talker stuff has got me thinking. Karen, you do know another language, which is you also know
Klingon.
Klingon. Dothraki. Oh. But also slightly more useful, Mandarin Chinese. And there's this poem in Mandarin Chinese that's kind of famous, and it's called various things, but it's like the story of the 10 stone lions.
Oh yeah. Mm. You know what? I didn't grow up with this.
Oh yeah. Did you find out about it later?
I found it on Facebook.
Oh really?
Yeah, it went viral on Facebook a couple years ago, okay. Recently it just kind of resurfaces. They're like, is this real? And I didn't grow up with the poem, but yeah. I mean, I can read it.
But it's real, right? Yeah. I mean, I'll read a little bit of the translation as it would be in English, and then Karen will read it to you what it sounds like in Mandarin. Okay.
Just the
first couple of lines.
Oh boy.
A poet named Shi lived in a stone house and liked to eat lion flesh, and he vowed to eat 10 of them. He used to go to the market in search of lions, and one day at 10 o'clock he chanced to see 10 of them there. Shi killed the lions with arrows and picked up their bodies, carrying them back to a stone house. His house was dripping with water, so he requested that his servants proceed to dry it. Then he began to try to eat the bodies of the 10 lions. It was only then he realized that these were, in fact, 10 lions made of stone. So that's what this means. But now Karen will read, this is what it sounds like.
Well, it's kind of hard.
Yeah.
And then, difficult.
It's many, many, many different words that are all pronounced, well, to our ears, shi.
S-S-H-I.
Right. But there's different tonalities of each of those, first
four.
Of all.
Yep.
There's four different tonalities.
Yeah, four different tones, and then with the four different tones, each can mean 5 million different things.
Right. Yeah.
Hence, you can get a lot of, you know, bang for your buck. You get a lot of meanings and words from
The tones are, it's rising, or how would you describe it?
So there's neutral. This is intro to Mandarin Chinese. There's neutral, there's rising, there's emphasis, and there's falling.
Okay. Hmm. All right.
So for like, in this case, it's natural is shi, rising is shi, emphasis is shi. And then falling is shi. Shi. And I just said poop in Chinese. One of the words means poop.
Of course it does. So anyway, that's not my segment. That was just something I thought of. But what I wanted to talk about was the language I know, which is Japanese. And you've probably come across something like this at some point. Some like clickbaity article that's like, 10 crazy Japanese translations of movies that you
won't believe.
And number 6 is the worst.
I need to interrupt you. Colin's looking at me. You know, it's so weird because Colin, a couple of episodes, talked about the octopus, the sex act that was canceled at the aquarium because the octopus was scared that the octopus was going to eat its mate.
Yeah.
And he talked about how the headline was clickbait.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I get so much listener mail about Colin's pronunciation.
So this is the second time. The other, I get overwhelming response of when you say basketball.
Yeah, basketball.
People
yeah,
think you say basketball.
That's crazy to me. But I mean, I've heard people, it's more than
really?
One
person. I've heard it, but only after somebody said it.
So here's what's funny. So
and
somebody
then, and then click somebody, baby.
Somebody said, oh, do we have a new what? Eggcorn? Did Colin say the word click baby?
Click baby.
And I'm like, oh. I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, click, no, I clearly click said baby. Click baity.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I went back and I listened to it.
It sounds like
it really does sound like I said click baby. I swear I said click baity. And you just said click baity as well.
Click baity.
Click baity. I don't know if it's, yeah, something in the way the audio is compressed.
And basketball and clickbait.
I promise you, dear listeners, I know the word is basketball right. and clickbait-y, yes. but it really did sound like I said click baby.
Yeah. And it's like it from does, so many of. People.
Yeah.
From so many people.
Uncanny. Wow.
Anyway, sorry, that was my clickbait.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering what I did wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Clickbaity.
Clickbaity article. Clickbaity articles.
Clickbaity.
Clickbaity. crazy Japanese translations of movie titles, you know. So, for example, can you tell me the movie that was titled in Japan, Grandpa Carl's Flying House?
It's up.
Yes, exactly. So I'm poking around this topic, and I actually found a 2014 Japan Times story that talked about the history of Japanese versions of American or foreign movie titles over time.
Oh, interesting.
And about long-term trends of what they did. So in the 30s and 40s, the predominant way of retitling a movie for Japan was actually not to translate the movie's title. It was just, they just retitled the movie. They'd sort of look at the whole thing and think, okay, what would be another good alternate title that would make more sense in Japanese? And so the examples given by the Japan Times story, the 1955 movie Summertime was just called in Japan Yojo, which means emotions of a traveler. They would just pick something out that would work better with that audience, not necessarily translated. So here's a quick question for you guys. This 1962 movie starring Gregory Peck was released in Japan as Alabama Story.
To Kill
a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, Alabama Story.
Okay.
And
they don't know
that's
the book.
How it's known in Japan to this day. Like you have to say, Alabama Story.
Because sometimes titles are kind of poetic. I mean, Summertime and To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
And so it's like poetry doesn't always flow that well into some
right.
of them.
I thought I was watching a movie about birds. Yeah.
It's
like, right. So by the 1950s, Japan had moved into direct translation of the titles. Now again, it's not, you know, this is the Japan Times guy kind of looking at broad trends in those eras. But in the 1950s, the big trend was direct translation. So The Seven-Year Itch, the Marilyn Monroe film, becomes Nananenme no Uwaki, which means like the affair that took place in the seventh year, you know? An affair deliberately meaning in this case, like extramarital nookie. Even more faithful to the original, that writes the Japan Times story, is Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, which was called Tori, as in birds. Now, in the 1960s, it changes again. And now the predominant thing is just rendering the English words with Japanese characters in katakana.
Oh,
so basically just using Japanese sounds to render the English words. So, mai feareri.
Okay.
Or cycle. You know, what it indicates is that people were becoming a little bit more globalized, like English, you know, in English words like lady, you know, or psycho or my are starting to make their way into Japan. People understand what that means.
Okay.
Right. And now, more recently, only just recently though, because through the 90s, you see a lot of just katakana eyes. It's kind of stuck that way from the 60s, 70s, 90s. Taminata, you know, that kind of thing. You know, but now there is a revival of the don't translate it at all movement. It's wrapped back to where it was in the 1930s and 40s.
Tell the story.
They just do a new, title. So I'm going to give you a quiz. I'm going to tell
you
the English translation of the Japanese title of the film and maybe give you a couple of hints because just to get you there. I have double checked all of these.
I have made sure that they are not made up.
There are a lot of fake foreign film titles out there.
And also Coca-Cola, that whole wax
that
tadpole
whole wax
thing.
Wax tadpole thing was made up.
Yeah.
And I found a list that said that Leaving Las Vegas in was retitled in Japan to I'm Drunk and You're a Prostitute.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was not. It was.
I've heard that before.
It came out in the 90s, so it was called Being Good Las Vegas. Yeah. Right. But if it came out today, it would be something totally different. Okay. It might actually be I'm Drunk. So anyway, be careful. So these I have checked. These are all true. Here we go. So in Japan, we're going to buzz in indeed. All right. I'll give you the Japanese title or the English translation of the Japanese title. You will give me the American title. Wild Speed.
Wild Speed.
It's about people going at high rates of speed. Dana?
Fast and the Furious.
Fast and the Furious. Wild Speed.
Well, how about Tokyo Drift then?
They renamed them all to other things. Yeah.
Oh, they're all they're not like Wild Speed 2?
Some of them are, and then some of them have different names. Yep. A 17-year-old's medical records. This is true. A 17-year-old's medical records. This is a 1999 film, Colin.
Is that Girl Interrupted?
It is Girl Interrupted. Well done.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
That makes sense.
You got it. You got it. Okay. Cheers. Your hint is this does not have anything to do with a bar in Boston. Cheers.
Okay. Cheers.
It does have to do with cheerleading.
Oh,
Karen,
bring it on.
Bring it on. Was called Cheers.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Love is Deja Vu. Karen.
Serendipity.
It's not serendipity.
Oh,
love is Deja Vu.
Love is Deja Vu.
Love Actually?
Not Love Actually. Karen.
Eternal Sunshine Spotless Mind.
Not Eternal Sunshine Spotless Mind. Definitely has Colin?
No, I was waiting for a hint, maybe.
Oh, it definitely has something to do with things like, gee, did I experience this before?
That's what I'm going with.
This
the
is
plot.
Not in the 90s.
This actually is the 90s.
Oh.
Is it 50 First Dates?
It's not 50 First Dates.
Oh, that's good.
Dana.
Groundhog's
it
Day.
It is Groundhog Day.
Oh.
Yeah, love is Deja Vu. Groundhog Day. Goodfellas.
Goodfellas.
Goodfellas?
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just looked at him like, oh, it's Goodfellas. Because they could have done Goodfellas, but it's not.
Yeah.
Goodfellas.
Okay.
Captain Supermarket. This is absolutely true. Captain Supermarket. This is a 1992 horror comedy film. Captain Supermarket.
92.
Wow,
so too early for like Shaun of the Dead, right?
Killer Tomatoes.
It's not Killer Tomatoes. It is so named. It is called Captain Supermarket. The very tenuous connection at the end of the movie, the main character is working in a actually a department store called S Mart.
End
of the movie.
Evil Dead.
It's
the Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Captain Supermarket.
Captain Supermarket. Whoa.
This is a 2000 movie, semi-autobiographical, and the Japanese title is Back in Those Days with Penny Lane.
Oh.
Colin.
Is that Almost Famous?
It's Almost
what
Famous.
What a funny coincidence.
Yeah.
Stacking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She was in the quiz. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Her name,
mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of stacking going on.
Same category.
Yep.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Bring it back.
Yeah.
Mileage. My Life.
Mileage.
My Life.
Oh,
was that Dana?
Yeah, Up in the Air.
It is up in the air.
Yeah, nice.
That's
a good one. That's
it's alliterative. This is you're gonna get it, but I really just wanted to say this because this is absolutely true. The Malkovich Hole.
I assume that's being John Malkovich.
John Malkovich. Yeah. No, it's not. It's a Bambi. No. Yeah.
Shut your Malkovich hole.
But that makes sense because it's in the
movie. It is, yes,
it
of course.
Is a hole.
It is. It's great, yeah. 007 dies twice.
Wow, this could be so many things.
Is this You Only Live Twice?
It is You Only Live Twice. Okay. Yep. 007 dies twice. Here's a tough one. Here's a tough one. Let's see if somebody can get this.
Okay.
Final Dead Coaster. Karen.
Final Destination.
I want to say three.
That's it.
Oh,
Final nice. Destination nice. Three, because they all die on a roller coaster.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Final
yep.
dead coaster. best kid. Best kid.
A rookie of the year?
No, no. This starred Jaden Smith.
Oh. Karate Kid.
It is Karate Kid.
Oh.
Probably renamed because there's no actual karate or Japanese yeah. people or anything
yep.
in that movie.
Yeah. Yep.
And finally, infamously, this is tough. This 2004 comedy was retitled in Japan, Bus Man. 2004 oh. indie comedy. Dana?
Is it Stranger Than Fiction?
No. Colin.
Little Miss Sunshine?
It is not.
That's why I was Bus Man.
Yeah, it has nothing to, the movie itself has
nothing to do nothing with the bus.
To do with
indie comedy.
Indie comedy. Give it away a little bit. It starred John Heater.
It's Napoleon Dynamite.
Napoleon Dynamite. Okay. So okay. The reason why it was called Busman came out in Japan in 2005, 2006, and that was when there was a movie called Train Man that was, it was a book, it was a TV series.
Oh,
it was a
Otaku.
Movie. It was very, very, very popular. Densha Otoko. It was hugely popular. And so releasing Napoleon Dynamite in Japan, they decided, oh, let's title this Busman so people will go see it.
Okay.
And they deliberately sort of aimed it at like internet nerds.
Smart.
But it was such a, but well, actually, like, it was such a ridiculous, such a crass attempt at connecting it with Train Man, even though they had nothing to do with each other at all, that they actually apologized.
Oh, really?
We're sorry we made this really dumb, craven kind of move. Busman, but to this day.
I mean, there's the scene Napoleon early on Dynamite, when they're on the bus going to school.
I mean, I guess they ride a bus at some
They do
point.
Ride the bus. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, sure.
That's a very tenuous,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And they put a big school bus on the poster behind him, just to be really clear.
So I'm going to play a clip, and this is the German version, the language dub of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Denn ohne diesen Schlüssel können wir nicht aufschließen, was wir nicht haben, das aufschließt. Also was für einen Sinn würde es machen, das zu finden, was aufschließt, was wir nicht haben, ohne zuerst einen Schlüssel gefunden zu haben, der aufschließt. Also suchen wir nach dem Schlüssel. Was für ein wirres Gerede.
The dude that you heard, he, not only is he speaking German, but like he has the Johnny Depp sound, and he also has like the weird kind of drunky, talky
language. Strange cadence.
Of in German. I don't understand it, but I can still hear the kind of the Captain Jack Sparrow-ness of that language dub. And it's funny because I think our age, when there's a foreign movie, we actually want to watch it in the original language that's in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And read the subtitles.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a different case for major G-rated family fun movie released outside, you know, I mean, English, American, or English language movies released to the rest of the world. When it's family entertainment, they will do foreign dubs in so many languages.
Kids don't want to read movies.
No. Yeah, it makes sense, especially with the Disney movies. There's the whole division, the voice character division of Walt Disney. They will spend so much time and craft to not only record all the different language versions of foreign language versions of the films, but they will also write and localize the script so that it matches their mouths.
Right. Yeah. And the songs.
And the songs. They rhyme. And it's not just like, I'm just reading a direct translation. It's all like carefully crafted. Antonio Banderas, he was Puss in Boots, you know, famous actor, but, you know, famously for his voice in Puss in Boots in the Shrek series. In the movie Puss in Boots, he signed on to voice not only the English version, but he also provided the foreign language dubs for Italian, Latin American Spanish, Castilian Spanish, and Catalan.
Whoa.
So if you're watching a Spanish foreign dub of Puss in Boots, that really is Antonio Banderas.
That's pretty cool.
Because he can speak all of those languages. And I'm sure after Guardians of the Galaxy, everybody saw that video of
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel. I am Groot.
In so many different languages.
Yeah. Which is easier for him because there's like three words.
Right.
But he provided the voice for
all of the foreign yep. language dubs. Yep. You know, Yo Soy Groot and I'm
in Polish. And,
But yeah, so if you are like Antonio Banderas, a Hollywood actor who knows or grew up a bilingual or multilingual, you have the right of refusal, according to a lot of Hollywood agents. They have the first right of refusal to say, to get to work on the foreign language dub in the other language. So for example is Helena Bonham Carter. She is fluent in French. So if they're going to make a French version of a movie she's in, they would ask her, like, would you want to provide the French redub your French language using your own voice? Because it's you who's playing it in the film. They're not redoing the scenes with her speaking French, but they're dubbing it. Funny enough, for live action movies, most of these Hollywood actors don't get paid extra if they choose to do so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's kind of like, well, it was your character. You get to control the character. And then now you know the other language and you can kind of like show off. A couple of people, the Hollywood Reporter said, Sandra Bullock is fluent in German. So she gets the first right of refusal for
That's really interesting. I never thought about that. Yeah. I mean, and it seems win-win, right? Because from the studio's perspective, there's the cachet of like, oh, and it's the original actress, you know, reading the parts as well. Yeah.
Famously, you know, because the Beatles music originally early on was very popular in Germany. They got the Beatles to record I Want to Hold Your Hand and at least one other song.
She loves you. Yeah, sie liebt dich.
Yep. Komm, gib mit deiner Hand. And they had them record it in German. But they didn't know German. So they did it. But like afterwards, they were like, never, ever, ever
again.
Stressful. It was so hard.
Oh, for the Beatles
to learn
a different language.
To learn how to sing the song and actually do it well in German. But they actually recorded two songs in German, which they did not know because it would be so popular in Germany.
Well, was it popular?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Well. Even the bad language.
Yeah, but as it turns out, they're happy with the songs being in English. It's fine.
Flight of the Conchords, they dubbed it into Spanish. Probably other languages, but definitely Spanish. And it sounds just like them. And the songs are really good, too. Yeah.
So a lot of these foreign language dubs, the voice actors, they want, like, say, Clint Eastwood in Spanish. It's the same guy who does all Clint Eastwood film.
Yeah, if you do it well once.
Yeah, and they might not sound like – he might not sound like Clint Eastwood, even though he does. But now the moviegoers have associated his voice with Clint Eastwood's face.
Right.
And so these people, a lot of them have their own fame voicing one particular actor. Actually, they do a bunch. And then go on in all of their movies. Robert De Niro in German is the same guy for the longest time.
That's such a good gig.
It is. It is a good gig. And
it's like you have like a shadow career, you know, where your success is kind of pinned to the success.
The new movie coming out. Yes.
And you're a local celebrity too. Well, that's it for me. Chris, we got one last. We haven't done an off-topic quiz in a while.
This is the traditional closing off-topic quiz. We've wrapped up our discussion of translation. This has nothing to do with that. Okay. This is a quiz, as a palate cleanser to take us home. It's called.
You prepared for the wrong show, didn't you?
I did. I can't. Sure. It's a quiz called Movies Go to the Movies.
Okay.
I think I did a quiz many, many episodes back about fake bands. This is a quiz about fake movies,
In
real movies.
Okay.
Yeah. I will tell you the title of the fake or fictional non-existent movie. You will tell me the title of the real movie that this fake movie appeared in.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here we go. Fake movie. Simple Jack.
That was in Tropic Thunder.
Yes, indeed. All right, now we've got it. Good Will Hunting 2, Hunting Season. Karen.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike
Jay
Back.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Yes, indeed.
Hunting Season.
Jews in Space. Karen.
History of the World Part 1.
Indeed,
Mel Brooks.
And then he made that movie and called it Spaceballs. This is the title of the film. The title of the fake film is Ass.
I don't know.
A-S-S?
Yes. It is currently the most popular film in the world of this movie. Won many Oscars.
Idiocracy.
It is. Idiocracy.
Oh, wow.
Angels with filthy souls. Oh, Angels with filthy souls. This, I will tell you this. This was done so well that I thought it was a real movie.
Wow.
It's like a gangster, black and white gangster movie. And I thought that it was real, but it was made specifically for
Home Alone.
For Home Alone.
Oh, yes.
When he's like, I believe you, but my Tommy gun don't. That is a,
that's a fake
that
movie.
Is a fake movie that is shot. Fake, it was done so well just for Home Alone.
Cause you just think, oh, it's old timey.
Yeah, it's probably
gangster.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Real. Yep. Its sequel had Angels with Even Filthier Souls in Home Alone 2. Yep. Don't.
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 Oh, man.
This was a fake movie trailer that appeared actually in the middle of two movies. Karen.
Grindhouse.
Oh,
Don't
okay.
was one of the, yes, there was,
Hobo with a Shotgun as well, right?
Machete.
oh, right.
And something was like, it was a holiday a horror movie, but I can't remember the name of it. Yes. Don't. Gandhi 2. Karen.
UHF.
UHF. Yes. Nation's Pride.
Wow.
Nation's Pride. Yes.
That was in Inglourious Basterds.
That is in Inglourious Basterds. Yes, indeed.
The Nazi propaganda film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good. Back to this word. Asses of Fire.
Oh.
Colin?
Is that South Park, the
that
movie?
That is South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. That is, yeah. That is actually the title of the Terrence and Phillip movie. It's called Asses of Fire.
It sounds very South Park.
Yeah.
Turbo Man. Turbo Man.
Turbo Man.
Turbo Man.
This is a crazy. Is it Jingle All the Way?
It is Jingle All the Way.
Yes!
Oh my
gosh.
Yes.
Like,
Turbo Man was the name
the
of the
superhero.
Action figure. And there's the fake Turbo Man film.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice. Wow, good job.
Fished it right out of the punch
bowl. Because
that was the toy that he's looking for.
Indeed. Jaws 19.
Oh, that's so familiar.
That is famously Back to the Future Part 2.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes, because it's like a 3D thing, right?
Right, right.
The Dancing Cavalier. The Dancing Cavalier. Now, I'm guessing you're not going to get this one immediately. The Dancing Cavalier. The film, the oh, wait.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. If you think you know it, without a hint.
Is it The Artist?
It is not The Artist.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay, what were you
going to
say?
Yes, what I was going to say was the film The Dancing Cavalier is a talkie, but it's being made with silent movie stars who are having trouble transitioning over into the world of talkies. Karen.
Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
I was like, you're describing The Artist.
Yeah, I was.
There's another movie that's like that.
Singing in the Rain. Brock Landers, Angels Live in My Town.
Oh, Brock Landers.
Brock Landers.
Such a familiar
Angels Live in My Town.
Name. What is that? I don't know.
Oh, it's so familiar.
Karen.
Boogie Nights?
Boogie Nights.
Okay.
Boogie
Man.
Nights.
But his name isn't Brock Landers, though.
So that's the name of the character.
Oh, that's
plays
right. He played
porn.
Brock.
Yes.
Yeah. Nom de porn, if
you
will.
Yes, indeed. No. That was the name of the character in the movie, not his actor name, who is, of course,
Dirk Diggler.
Dirk Diggler. Yes. Thank you.
Yes,
and finally, Log Jammin'. Log Jammin'.
Log Jammin'.
It's in a 90s cult favorite film. One of the characters ended up in an adult picture named Log Jammin'.
Ended up in
American Pie?
That is from The Big Lebowski.
Oh.
From The Big Lebowski. Yep.
Cool.
All right. Well, yes. Admirable job overall. Some good pulling some stuff out of the old memory banks there.
I don't pay close attention to movies, I
realize. Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, when you're like, oh, a fake movie in a movie, I was like, oh, there can't be that many. But there's so many.
There
it's like fake bands in movies. It's like, oh, there aren't that many. And then there's so many.
There's a lot of them.
Woo.
Hey.
Good job, everybody. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about wind talkers, code breakers, French words, and fake movies. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.